Speaking of cash, that appears to be the biggest hurdle right now in order for us to see baseball get started. Forget resume their season. They got to start their season. And it's a public battle. It has turned ugly. Max Scherzer posted something last night. He took bullets for the whole PA. Everyone's hating on Max Scherzer. He's just speaking on behalf of all the players. But they are not happy. The players are not happy with the owners and what they've recently offered for them to come back and return to play. And to chat about that, we're joined now by former MLB-er and MLB Network radio host. He's been on the show many times. It's always great to have him on. Here is C.J. Nitkowski. How ugly is this getting, C.J., from your standpoint, between the players and the owners?
Well, we don't love hearing the tone, and we don't love hearing that they're so far away, but it's also kind of par for the course. You know, the owners might have came in a little bit light here, I think, to start, and that set some guys off, right? The idea that players felt like they agreed to the thought of playing a prorated salary in the season, however many games they were going to play, that's how much they were going to get. But there was some clauses in there that said if there's economic change, then we need to adjust, and there certainly will be economic change with no fans in the stands. And so I think it's reasonable to ask for something, but they probably came in a little bit light. You know, from a percentage standpoint, when you look at, say, Gerrit Cole as an example, who's scheduled to make, what, $35, $36 million, and you're asking him to take seven, well, I think where the players got really angry was that they looked at that and said, are you trying to pin us against each other? Are you trying to ask the biggest stars who are going to be fine and make tons of money and a lot of guaranteed contracts there to take a huge hit for the little guy? And I don't think they love that part. So that's probably what set this off a little bit. They come back, the players do, with 100 games, and there'll be some back and forth. But there's going to be some opportunity here to get this done. We'll continue to remain optimistic. The idea of shutting down negotiations kind of the way that the Max Scherzer suggested is something that comes out of emotion. That can't be a reality. That would be a huge mistake. Too many people count on this game for their livelihood, not just the players, but so many more people beyond that. And that would be a huge mistake. I don't think that we see that. But I think the emotion, we get it. They're upset, and everybody wants to see baseball, and so we'll get some of this back and forth that sometimes gets us discouraged.
Yeah, and I can understand why the players would kind of read it as a wedge within the Players Association, because I think it would be successful in doing so. I mean, I read yesterday, I think 65% of the league makes around $1 million, give or take, so they're still taking home like a lot of money, like close to what they would in a full season. So I can understand why Mike Trout and Gerrit Cole, the big boys that really carry the game in terms of branding and marketing, are like, this isn't cool. But they're going up against like 15 other guys in their own clubhouse who are like, let's just take it and play. Like, I don't see why you wouldn't want to sign off on this if you were one of the 65% that doesn't make a ton of money, relatively speaking, anyway, and you're still going to pull in 80% of your cash.
Well, not 80% of their entire salary. So remember, so if we go with the prorated games, let's just say you were scheduled to make $1 million this year, you're at 82 games, you're knocked down to $500,000.
Right.
And then they want you to take a cut on top of that. And in that range for the $1 million player, like you were talking about, I believe it was around 13% of a hit, right? So they're going to lose even more money. They're going to be making in the 400s in a year that they thought they were going to be making $1 million. But at the same time, for that player, you know, who knows at what point of his career that player is at, right? If he's kind of working his way up, but he's a little bit older, he knows he doesn't have years to give up, right? Every year, and especially now where the game is that we get further and further away from older players, there's some pressure there to get it done and to get paid. And so no doubt those guys not looking at nearly as big of a hit could put some pressure on the union. But I don't see it right now, at least not the way that we're hearing from players. And there'll be some infighting a little bit here and there, but they'll always work through it. The one thing about this union, and I'm sure you guys have heard it plenty of times among all the major sports, is that it is the strongest in all of the major sports, and they do a good job of keeping those guys together. And, you know, a couple of cracks in the union probably would help owners as far as how they do with their bottom line. But at the same time, owners have done pretty well in the last couple of negotiations, and I think players feel that as well. And so I still think they're rallying around each other. As much as that guy who was scheduled to make $1 million and might only make $450 this year would really like to get going and feel a lot better about that, and he's not worried necessarily about Mike Trout's bottom line because he knows he's going to be fine. But I do think that some of those guys, you'd be surprised, you know, how angry they get or how strong they are about keeping that union together and fighting for what they believe in.
With MLB analyst C.J. Nitkowski. Go ahead, Pooley.
Yeah, principal name that's come up in the last couple of days has been Scott Boras and his role in all of this, and a couple of players actually reaching out on Twitter and taking shots at him for injecting himself into the middle of this.
Yeah, Trevor Bauer, right? One never short for opinions. He does some work for us on MLB Network Radio. We love having him because you're going to hear it unfiltered. You're going to hear it raw. And so some back and forth there, no doubt. And, you know, you listen to some of the people around the game and some of the people that cover the game and talk to agents pretty consistently that there are times where that does come up and it becomes a concern. Now, I don't think Scott Boras tells Tony Clark and their negotiators what to do, but he does have one of the strongest opinions in the game. Of course, you have to at least listen from a guy who I think he negotiated more than $1 billion in contracts this past offseason, right? So you have to, at least his opinion does matter. The question becomes, is he really driving everything that happened? Max Scherzer is one of his clients. If Scott's angry, does that mean Max is angry? Max Scherzer is a really smart guy. He's a bright guy. He follows these issues really closely. I don't think he's necessarily taking any directives from his agent. He could be having those conversations. But that is something that has been out there a little bit. I don't know if it's is a problem necessarily for the union. I think on the inside is where you'd have to find that out, and I just don't think it's that big of a deal. I think right now we just have people sharing some opinions. There's a lot of frustration out there for these guys that want to get this deal done and get back to playing baseball.
With C.J. Nikowski, once we get there, and I'm with you, I still feel like it's going to happen. I think they're going to play, whether it's 82 games, 100 games, somewhere in between. I think it's going to happen. Someone's going to win the World Series in the fall or even closer to Christmas time in December. But let's, because it's been a while, who do we like? Like, who, once we get back to this and once we negotiate it, who are you looking at this year, C.J.? Let's talk baseball. Who do you think are the favorites at this point?
Well, what makes it interesting is just the idea of what could happen in a short season, right? With our game, the idea of being a Cinderella story is a very difficult thing to do. You can make a run maybe in the postseason, but over 162 games, you know, it kind of gets weeded out. Now, of course, some injuries here and there will slow some teams down, but I think for the most part, it's a really difficult thing to do. If we go to a half a season like we're going to have, that door opens up a little bit, and there's some opportunities for some teams. So I'll take a team like the Oakland A's, who the last couple of years have gotten off to a really slow start, and then they make a run. The Tampa Bay Rays are another team. I still think that the main characters are there, but if you're looking for a couple of dark horses, I think Tampa Bay could be one of them. Oakland could be one of them. Maybe the Padres, right? They've made a couple of moves, and they're not all the way in yet, but they've kind of dipped their toe in the water and started moving in that direction. They certainly made a couple of really big moves with Manny Machado and Eric Hosmer over the last couple of years. They added some pitchers. Perhaps they could be a team that sneaks in there a little bit. I think the teams that we know are rebuilding are going to continue to rebuild, like the Detroit Tigers and the Kansas City Royals. You know, the White Sox made some fun moves this offseason. They're another team that they've been trying to spend money. They've been having a hard time doing it. They made a couple of nice acquisitions. Not sure if it's enough. But, again, in a shortened season, it really could happen. And, listen, we love what's going on with the Blue Jays and the young, exciting players that they have. They haven't added yet as far as the dollars, but that's coming pretty soon. But I love this. And especially if we're going to do these divisions the way that they talked about, right, splitting it up a little bit differently geographically, adding a couple of teams to the postseason. Right? If we go to 14 in the postseason, we saw what the Nationals did. They almost lost that wild card game last year. Mm-hmm. Right? And it was a big hit in the eighth inning and a ball that was misplayed in right field led to three runs, and they won that wild card game, and then they go on to win the World Series. That's what's cool about our game. Even though we're playing longer series and pitching does matter, you can go on a run or you can get eliminated in that wild card game. So it should be fun. I don't know if we necessarily have absolute favorites, juggernauts that can't be beat. Yes, the Yankees are going to be really good. The Dodgers are going to be really good. But I can't stand here with confidence and say it's going to be the Yankees and the Dodgers in the World Series. I think there's plenty of challengers.
Yeah. No, I'm with you, too, on the expanded playoffs. That's where the Jays, I think, feel a lot better about their circumstances because I don't think they're ready to truly compete this year. I thought with their additions, they signed Ryu, they signed Roark, you know, they acquired Anderson, mm-hmm. a couple of veteran guys. And Ryu, if he's healthy, can pitch, as we know. Roark, you know, I don't think he's a number two in a legitimate rotation, but he can give you innings. But I thought they could creep up towards a 500 club this year, maybe. But if we're talking, you know, a shortened season like you just detailed and two more playoff spots, maybe that second wild card, quote unquote, is an 83 win team, and maybe they can get there, like the equivalent of an 83 win team over 82 games, if you know what I mean. Maybe they can be there. Like I think that's what the Blue Jays are hoping for, because they're your classic middle of the road team right now, who projects to be very good if they continue to connect where they're supposed to in the next two or three years. But the expanded playoffs, I think the Blue Jays are. a prime example of a team that could truly take advantage of that.
They could. The issue that, you know, they might run into, we'll see what happens as far as how the divisions actually get laid out. Anything that's happening in the American League East still runs really deep, right? If you get this division where the Mets and the Braves and the Phillies and the Nationals are in it, and we just try to split baseball up geographically and essentially put everybody in their time zone outside of, you know, the Astros and the Rangers would be the ones that would have to go in the West, which are already in the West anyway, and have to jump two time zones. It could make it interesting, but that would be a tougher division to sneak in there. There's so many teams that would get in, but they would have definitely a difficult schedule playing some really good National League teams to go along with some really good American League teams that would be in that East. I mean, it helps that the Red Sox are probably taking a step back this year, but it will be a challenge. But I tell you what, I think with that group of guys, for me, when you watch them from the outside, they look like they fear no one, right? I mean, I think the way Bobichet plays the game and Junior plays the game, and certainly Biggio has the experience and knows it from his family and seeing it. And for all those guys, I mean, I guess that's the case. But they just look like they're not going to be intimidated by anybody, which makes you feel a little bit more confident when you look at them and say, can they surprise? Now, of course, that pitching is going to matter. But these guys just don't look like a group that's going to go in a little bit timid playing against anybody. And that will work to their favor. As well, they're a fun team to watch, and I think a lot of people have them as kind of the, you know, the team of the next decade to really keep an eye on.
Yep, I think you're spot on that. Always great catching up with you. Thank you for doing this, CJ. We'll do it again soon.
My pleasure. Take care, guys.
CJ Nikowski from MLB Network Radio. Yeah, that's interesting.
Sorry, Brian. I like that he's, you know, tracking the Blue Jays, that they could be a real solid team moving forward. You know,
yeah. And I think if this was a 162-game season, they are not ready to compete. Like, they still, I think, need another full season of growth, and they need to add in a couple of, you know, prime spots. But
arms.
They need more arms. Sure. They need their, you know, Nate Pearson, I think, is a guy that eventually is going to get there, maybe this summer, and he could be a true wild card. Like, if he shows up and looks like the beast that we project that he can and will be, all of a sudden maybe he's the guy that pushes Roark down. Maybe you got Ryu and him as true, like, number one and number two guys in your rotation, and you're talking about something. But they need a center fielder still. They might need a first baseman. Well, they do. Like, there's still some spots where they really need to add, and they need to improve. And CJ brings up a good point. If they are going to go with the 10 teams in the East, 10 in the Central, 10 in the West, and, like, the NL East is a beast, man. Washington coming off a World Series win. Atlanta's good. Philly's got talent. The Mets, you know, they got pitching anyway. It's not going to be easy. It won't be easy. But that that extra two spots, maybe that last team that sneaks into the playoffs is just above 500. And getting to just above 500 over 82 games is a lot easier than trying to do that over 162. So it might
minor
benefit
the Jays.
Minor
leagues took a real hit today, though. Eh? Minor
Huge.
Leagues took a real hit.
That's
huge hit.
Like how do
layers,
you explain that?
Full layers. I don't know. So the way it was explained is they cut a number of minor league players. They like cut them.
Yeah, you're out.
You're out. No job. So I don't know whether that means now if you're a wealthy team, you know, and the Blue Jays are, can you go and just like, hey, let's steal some players. Let's just, you know, bop around and steal some players from different organizations that, you know, maybe we like that guy Double A or even Instructional League or Class A. This is going to be a real chance, I think. Like they said, thousands of minor league players were cut.
That's a great point about them becoming free agents, I guess. I mean, you can't. You have to be. Yeah, exactly. You can't cut guys and then be like, oh, wink, wink, we still own your rights. Like, no way.
Right.
Like, that's not going to fly. And as you said, like, thousands of minor league players are just, they're out. And it's like, what's going to happen with those minor league teams and the affiliates and the leagues? And
that's a big part of some team's success is, you know, they grow them right up through the entire system. You know, 7, 8, 9, 10 minor league teams they have through the various, you know, hierarchies up through the ranks, and they're patient and they bring them up. And all of a sudden you're losing massive layers of those players.
Yeah, that's.
I don't know.
I mean, every sport is going through it. It's not just baseball. Like, you know, junior hockey. When are they coming back? You know, AHL hockey, like, you know, developmental leagues. Like, you know, Nick Robertson is very unique because he's going to have an opportunity to play with the Leafs or be around the Leafs. There's the other young prospects that are sitting there going, I may not play till January.
Yeah. Well, exactly, and like the draft as well. Yeah. Like, how is it going to affect the NHL and the NBA draft?
Yeah,
and where players are going, and
even how many looks you get at them. You know, already you're missing the U18s. You're missing, critical viewing areas that you just won't see them.
Yeah, no, you're right.